So this is my new Windows phone. I'm happy to be back at Microsoft. Oh, it's not a Windows phone. Everybody can hear me? Good. I was originally planning to kind of convert my talk to Visual Basic, my other favorite language. But then I thought, you know, these Microsoft guys can learn a little bit from Scala. So I left it in Scala. Okay, so the one thing after I left Microsoft, the one thing, VB was my favorite language, but you know, I typically use C sharp. Now I'm kind of, you know, I've become more extreme. On the one hand, I'm using PHP or Hack. You will hear about that later. But then for most of my other programming stuff, I use Scala. Okay? And I think Scala gives me everything that C sharp doesn't give me. And so I hope that I can show you a little bit of that kind of, you know, the beauty of Scala. But what I want to talk about mostly is this reactive stuff. Okay, it seems to be now that, like, you know, reactive is the new agile, and everybody is talking about reactive this, reactive that. Even, you know, during breakfast, somebody, Terrence Parr, was telling, oh, I have this reactive thing. It's like everything is reactive. What the fuck is reactive? Okay. Well, let's look at the reactive manifesto. These are not communist, or maybe they are. I don't know. But you go to this manifesto, and you read it, and I fall asleep. Blah, 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 blah. The fourth word is architecture. So these are people that talk about code but don't write code. Okay? And never, ever believe people that only talk about code. Which is another great thing in Silicon Valley. I mean, I'm teaching the Microsoft people here some kind of lessons that I learned. In Silicon Valley, there's nobody, or hardly anybody, that doesn't write code. But talks about it. In Redmond, like, a lot of people talk about code but don't write it. So I think Microsoft can only come back if, you know, they start writing more code. Anyway, so let's talk about code then. So let's go to Wikipedia. Okay, Wikipedia is the source of all my knowledge. So you go to Wikipedia and you search for reactive programming. And then there's some vague definition, blah, 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 programming paradigm. Hey, guys, this is not something. This is a paradigm. And then it says automatically propagates changes. Woo, that sounds very powerful. So let's look at this imperative program here. Var x equals 10, print line x, okay, prints 10. X equals 42, print x. Prints 42. Hey, the changes are automatically propagated. So we're already doing reactive programming. Isn't that amazing? So I think this definition is useless, okay, because it doesn't tell us anything new. Okay, then.
Reactive is the new monad.
Reactive is the new monad. I don't know. Let's Google. Okay, let's Google. And if you Google for this, endless confusion, okay? What is the difference between reactive and functional reactive programming? And then there's one sensible guy there or girl, just say no to reactive programming, okay? This is all, I think, it's sad. It's sad that, you know, something cool gets so kind of, you know, confused and diffused. So what I'm going to do today is I'm going to tell you exactly what reactive programming is. Okay, because as I said, I have no fucking clue. Oh, this is America, I cannot say that. I've been doing talks in Europe where this is perfectly fine. So, sorry for kind of, you know, the bad language. Okay, now, I think this year was a proud moment. Leslie Lamport got the Turing Award. Leslie Lamport is, by the way, that's the only Microsoft product I still use, LaTeX. All right, but Leslie Lamport had some, when he got his Turing Award, they asked him, you know, a couple of questions, and there was one answer that I really liked, because that's what I've been doing for the past, you know, how long I've been doing computer science, is that There is something that we're not using enough, and it's called mathematics. Okay? It's kind of strange that computer scientists are often afraid of mathematics, whereas we should be kind of, you know, embracing mathematics, because mathematics is, you know, it's the pinnacle of abstraction. So we should strive for that. And of course, I know there's a couple of Mathematica people here. By the way, it's kind of funny. Now it's called the Wolfram language. And if you look what it has everything. I mean, this is a language that has really everything. Anyway, let's look at mathematics. Okay? And I'm going to kind of look at reactive programming with a mathematical eye. And of course, you know, when I was a young Eric, long, long time ago, I programmed in Haskell. So I know everything about side effects and monads and stuff like that. And so this is a picture that I have tattooed on my right shoulder. Okay. And these are the four essential effects of programming. And let me kind of talk about this. If you have a method that returns one result synchronously, in most programming languages, we kind of are silent about the effects. Of course, in Haskell, this would be I/O of T. But hey, you know, if effects are implicit, you know, we're just returning T. If you have a function that synchronously returns many values, you use enumerable or iterable. I will talk later about why I think Java's iterable is broken. And so I'm using .NET's enumerable. So this is what we all know, okay? But now in the new world, we have to do asynchronous programming or reactive programming. So what's the big difference there is that things are asynchronous, okay? Because there's latency. I have to make a call across the network or even, you know, fetch something from disk, which takes a long time. So now when you have something that returns one value asynchronously, you return a future or a task. I think tasks in .NET are quite nice because they're comonadic. I don't have time to kind of explain that today. But what I'm going to do is I'm going to derive observable today here. And that is something when you have many results that are delivered asynchronously. So this is for asynchronous data streams. Okay. Now, of course, as I said, I also kind of program in Hack. So I know all about objects. PHP is an object-oriented language. It has iterators. It has, you know, traits. It has interfaces. It has classes. And in Hack, it has, you know, nullable types and all the goodness. So PHP is kind of, you know, a fantastic OO language. Okay? So let's look at an object here. And then I switch to Scala. So here's a class person. And it has a name and an age. All right? But if you look at this for a second, you see that really what is an object, it's kind of, you know, a bunch of functions, a bunch of getters, and a bunch of setters. Okay? So let's get rid of all this object stuff and go down to the essence. I only want to look at getters and setters. So let's start with getters. Here's the type of getters. And a getter is a function that takes nothing and returns a value of type A. Now, of course, if this was a real function, it would be quite boring, right? Because if it was a real function, it could only ever return the same value. But since we're in imperative language, this is really a side-effecting function. And that's why I love this function type, okay? I'm Dutch. And we all know this term, going Dutch. Okay. That's true. If I go out on a date, I always let the other person pay. Now, this guy here is great because this is a function that out of nothing gives you a value of type A. And you can kind of call it as many times as you want. And every time you get a value. This is great. This is a wealth-producing function. Okay? It's a getter. All right. Now, you may think, Eric, what a big deal. It's just a function from unit to A. How interesting can that be? Well, let's look at it. Well, here, if A is a subtype of B, then a getter of A is a subtype of a getter of B. All right? So let me kind of explain this using vending machines. If this is soft drinks and this is Coca-Cola, okay? Now, if you want a vending machine that gives me soft drinks, I can give you a vending machine that gives you Coca-Colas and you should not complain. Okay? Because every time you get something out of this vending machine, you get a soft drink and Coca-Cola is a soft drink. Okay? Easy. So these things are, you know, my intuition for getters is a vending machine. You put in something or nothing. It's like free sodas. Every company has free sodas. All right. So that is covariance. Ha! But it's also a functor. You know what a functor is, Dave?
I've always been afraid to try and find out.
Okay, well, here it is. It's a dirty word, yes. But it's really easy. A functor is something that takes a function from A to B and lifts it to a function, in this case, from a getter of A to a getter of B. That's all a functor is. It's something that takes a function and lifts that function over your structure. Now, and that's the thing is called map. Okay? Now let's look at this functor here. Okay? So given a function from A to B, I need to create a function from a getter of A to a getter of B. And here I'm going to teach you a little trick. Okay? Because how do you define this function? And I have no clue. So what I do is I just look at this thing here. I say I need map. It needs a function. So let's call that f. And now it needs to return a function from a getter of A to a getter of B. So let's call this guy A. Okay, so this is a getter of A. And now I need to return a getter of B. So what is that? It's a function from unit to something. Function from unit to something. So far, I have not used a single cycle of my brains. Okay, of course, my brain is the size of a peanut, so I don't have any spare cycles there. So this is the only way I can proceed. But so far, everybody agrees, I've done nothing. I've just looked at this thing and kind of come here. Okay, so now I have a function from A to B and a getter of A, and I need a B. Ah, I can do that by applying the getter. Now I get a value of type A, and apply the function. Now I get a value of type B. Okay, so I just look at the types, and there's my definition of map. Do I understand what this does? I don't.
You don't have to.
I don't have to, because the types are correct, and now my function is correct. Okay. Of course, I could also have defined map f of A equals throws, then the types would have been correct as well, but yeah, I don't think that definition would have worked. All right? But this is kind of the beauty of, I think, of functional programming. Is where the types guide you. I don't have to look at the code, I just look at the types.
So that's not the normal function map. I think we normally call map, but that's
why is this not the normal function map?
Is it
actually just E, it's not a function. Map does not return function, map returns E.
Map takes a function from A to B and returns a function from A to U to so this is really map. You want me to write some more brackets here?
but
list is another example of a functor. So map doesn't. No, this is the whole point. This is why mathematics is so beautiful. You don't need lists. I can map things over getters too. And what is a getter? It's like a list of one element, right? It's a list of many elements because every time it's an infinite list. Every time I call the getter, I get a new value. So it's really a list, an infinite list. So this map is, in some sense, it is like the normal map. Okay? Good. Think about that. All right. Good.
More people, don't try to understand.
You don't need to understand. But let's give you a real example here. Okay, so Steve Ballmer, our hero, he just paid $2 billion for a basketball team. Can you imagine? Everybody that ever bought Office and Windows and whatever really bought a basketball team.
It's only 0.6
beats. Anyway,
so, but this function here has side effects, right? This unit arrow A has side effects. So let's look at a concrete example of a getter, and that's Steve Ballmer. So Steve Ballmer, somebody that you give nothing, and he will kind of produce a sound bite. Okay? So we all know when we kind of, you know, we ask Steve Ballmer to say something, developers! Do I have sweat under my armpits yet? I don't know. And then, this one I like the most of Steve. Blah, 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 blah. That's what he had. And then Windows 8, Windows 8, and then boom, exception. Suddenly he was gone. And 2 weeks later, everything that Microsoft did was open source. It's a miracle. All right? So, really, this type signature here is lying to you. Okay? It says that it always gives you a string, but as you see here, it can also throw an exception. So let's make this type signature more precise. Okay? And in Scala, there's this try type, which is really like Java stro. So really this says a getter is something that you give nothing, and it either gives you a value of type A, or it throws an exception. So now we have made this type more precise. All right? Good. Now let's look. Yep.
Square and round braces, what's the difference?
Ah, so this in C-sharp or Java or whatever, this would be angle brackets. But those angle brackets, they look so prickly and kind of, you know, they hurt. And in Scala, they're nice and square. Hey, language design is all about bike shedding. So you can even bike shed about the kind of, you know, the brackets. Yeah? Yeah, but then maybe it's indexing in the try. I don't know. Okay? So I'm making this exception. So this is Scala. So this means, you know, it takes nothing, and it returns an A, but it may throw. Okay, so I've made the type more precise. Now let's look at another getter, Steve Jobs, also a function from unit to string. So when you ask Steve Jobs to say something, iPhone, okay, and then iPad, iCloud, and then he terminated naturally, okay? So that's a very different kind of terminating the stream of sound bites. Okay? So the type of this getter is not precise enough. So let's make it now super precise. Okay? So a getter is a function that takes nothing, that either gives you a value, or it terminates normally, or it throws an exception. Okay? So now we've made the types explicit, yes?
Why is the try before the option and not the other way around? Does it make any difference?
Yes, it makes a difference. Good question. So this thing, I should kind of say it maybe in the right order. Takes nothing, it may throw an exception. If it doesn't throw an exception, it may either return a value or terminate normally. So now I'm super precise. Thank you.
Okay.
Good? So that's why, so option of try is very different, because then it would return normally with either nothing or an exception or a value. So that's a subtle difference. And this is why I am not a big fan of domain-specific languages, because domain-specific languages are all about tastefully kind of, you know, create combinations of side effects. That's what language design really is about, okay? And you see here that it's very subtle whether you do the option or the try in the reverse order. So that's the role of a language designer, is to kind of, yeah, it's like spicing, it's like a cook, and you have to spice your values with side effects. And that's very difficult. All right. Now, since we're computer scientists, we always love self-application, okay? And the question is, if I have a getter, that's great. But Eric, how do I create a getter? How do I get a getter? Where do the getters come from? Hey, of course. There's a getter that gives me a getter. problem solved, one level of indirection. So let's do that. So I have a getter that returns a getter. Now, this outside getter, I don't put the try option, A, whatever, because I assume that the outer getter will never fail. Okay? That would be weird, right? If my new, you know, if my getter, if the constructor of something would fail. So I'm just going to leave that outer getter just as it was. I'm not going to make the effects explicit. Okay? But here you see, this is a getter of getters. And I've done nothing else than making the types explicit and giving you a way to create getters. Does anybody recognize this type? Every VB programmer uses this type every day, multiple times. Okay? Nobody recognizes this type?
Nobody uses VB.
Nobody uses VB. What? Huh? Nobody uses VB. Okay, in Dart, if you use Dart, you use this type every day. There's one person that uses Dart. Okay, sorry. Next thing. In Java, you don't. Because in Java, the type is slightly different, as I will explain. But let's kind of, the reason I think you don't recognize it is it has all this functional programming stuff. Lambdas, units. So let's rewrite this as a set of interfaces. So one thing is that this guy, unit arrow drive option of A, as I said, this thing is something that takes unit and then returns this or that or that. So I'm going to split the result type into different functions, okay? So that it's not kind of, you know, this kind of complicated type. So I'm going to simplify it like that. And then I'm leaving the outer one, but it's returning the type of the inner one. So here it is. This is my getter. It takes nothing, and it returns an enumerator. And an enumerator was something that either that has this move next that returns a Boolean, or that can throw, and that has a current value. So let's go back to this thing here. As I said, this was a getter that returns this guy. So this guy is the thing that we call enumerator. So that's the first guy here. The get enumerator, it returns the enumerator. So you see this is unit arrow that. And then this guy was something that given nothing could give you a value every time you call it, but it could also tell you that there was no value or it could throw an exception. Okay? So I've kind of just pivoted that type around and I now get this. Now of course, in Java this would say throws exception. And there you see that the exception. But this type is kind of hand-wavingly isomorphic to the previous type. And guess what? Now you recognize this, right? This is enumerator enumerable. We use this every day. Now, why don't I like the Java iterable iterator? So in Java, there's iterable that has an iterator that returns an iterator. But in Java, this guy has next, and then it has here, is it next or something? But here, this guy has the side effect. So when you call next, that's why there's parens here, it returns a Boolean or throws an exception, and there is where the side effects happen, and then you can call current multiple times, okay? If I don't have that protocol, it's not corresponding to this type, okay? So I have to kind of, you know, have this, this type where I kind of have this kind of operational protocols. You call move next, that's when the exceptions are thrown and where the value is created, and then you can call current multiple times without introducing other effects.
What's the plus sign?
The plus sign means that this is covariant.
Okay,
remember the getter, and this is, I didn't explain it, but so the getter was covariant, and the getter of the getter was also covariant. Ah, that was great. Simplifies, but we'll see that that's not staying that simple for long. Okay? So now let's do something else. Given an enumerable, I want to kind of have this function that takes an enumerator to an enumerator, and I can kind of, you know, build it like this. And again, if you go through this, I won't go do that for time reasons, but you know, this function here, you can derive again by just looking at the types, okay? Just following the types. And now, if I want to define map over enumerables, and I have map over enumerators, I can just use this lift function here, this lift function here that goes from enumerator to enumerator, and then turn that into a map from enumerable to enumerable. Okay? So this map here is the map over enumerator. So now you see, this is code reuse. Okay? I have a map on the enumerator, and I just lift it up to the map over the enumerable without having to do anything. Okay? And this map over enumerator is something that we already did, right? Because that was the map that William Cook said was not a map, but it was a map. And now I show you also that enumerable is a functor, just by doing nothing, but just lifting the underlying definition. And this is lazy programming, right? I don't want to do anything. I just want to lift stuff from the underlying level to the next level. Question? Sure, you are right. Look at that. Absolutely right. So I need to reference F, so there we go. Is that better? Good, thank you. Just watching if you kind of, you know, you drank too much last night. All right, good, so now we all understand getters. Okay, getters are simple functions. I made them more precise by looking at the types. Then I showed that they were functors, and then I showed that I can lift the functor of a getter to a getter-getter, and the getter-getter is now still a functor. So the property of functorness is preserved by applying another level of indirection. It's all beautiful, okay? And so .NET has this enumerable enumerator type, and it's of deep beauty, because really, an enumerable is a getter of a getter. Isn't that beautiful? But that's not how we explain it to people, unfortunately. Maybe they won't, the VB people probably won't understand it like that, but I don't know. All right, so now I'm going to tell you my second trick here. And this is a trick that, you know, that I started applying in my PhD thesis 30 years ago. And my company is called now Applied Duality, and that's all I know. Okay, there's one thing I know, and that is applying duality. And what does that mean? It means reversing the arrows. Okay, so what I did now, and you can check if there's the same typo in the slides. What I did is I copied and pasted all the slides until now, and reversed all the arrows in every signature. Okay. Let's see what that gives us. And just did it mechanically, right? Copy and paste, and then substitute the arrows around. So if I do this for a getter, what do I get? A setter. Okay? This is something. This is a weird function. Look at this thing. It takes an A, and it returns nothing. So by the way, people, Scala people, should jump up and down because this is not valid Scala. In Scala, you would write A arrow unit instead of parens. But hey, this is PowerPoint, so okay. Otherwise, it doesn't look nicely symmetrical. But this is a weird function. This is like a garbage can. Okay, you put in an A and you get nothing out. But still, it's useful. I hope so. So setters are like garbage cans, and it's kind of weird. Again, if this was a purely functional language, if this was Haskell, this function could do nothing else than just ignore the argument. So it would be completely uninteresting. So remember, there's an implicit IO or implicit side effect that we're going to make more precise, because otherwise this function would be, you know, just, it would be the same as unit. So let's look at this some more. Okay, now my brain starts to hurt a little bit. I need some fire water. Because since I reversed the arrows, now something weird happened here. So if A is a subtype of B, a setter of B is now a subtype of a setter of A. So it's contravariant. Yes, you are looking like, me too. Now let's look at this thing, okay? A setter, it's a garbage can, okay? Now I'm going to give you a trick. It's like not a politically correct trick, but it's a great trick, okay? So here we have recyclable stuff is a subtype of trash, right? So we have trash, and then we have a subtype of that is recyclable stuff. So now I'm going to implement a garbage can. So if you want to have a garbage can there, recyclable stuff, I want to implement that. So this is something. So if you ask for a garbage can for recyclables, I can implement that by putting a garbage can underneath. This is going to save us money. So let's check here. Charles, can you check in the garbage cans there?
Yeah.
Are those, you see?
Yeah.
That's recyclable, but it's really a garbage can. I mean, this is going to make us lots of money. Okay, good. Yeah, maybe, and replace it by a beach volleyball team. Anyway, let's look at this guy. Now let's look at map. Because this, I can do map. Now, William, this thing is not a map as we all know it. Because it's a contravariant map. It's a cofunctor. Well, a difficult word. So if I have a function from A to B, I can turn that into a function from a getter of B to a getter of A. You see? Is it setter? Yes. Oh, setters. Good. You're still paying attention. So a function from A to B becomes a function from setters of B to setters of A. So it's reversed. But again, let's look at the types. Okay? So we have a function from A to B. I have a setter of B's. And I need a setter of A's. A setter of A's is a function that takes an A. And then what does it need to return? Unit. I could immediately return unit, but that would not be fun. So what do I do instead? Oh, I have a setter of B's that needs a B. Oh, I had a function from A to B, and I happen to have an A around, so I apply F to A, give it to the setter, and then I'm done. Okay? So again, I just looked at the types, and I've derived the cofunctor for setters. Do I understand how this works, why it works? I don't. Do I care? I don't care. The types are correct, so the function must be correct. Okay? Good. Now let's make the type more interesting, more precise, because this is me, and I'm like a setter of things too. Okay? So one thing is like, oh, I created this, I created this, I created this, and then suddenly I got fired. Okay, I got this thing thrown at me. Oh, dagger in my heart. Eric, leave Microsoft. So this type of setters is not precise. So let's make it precise. It can either take a value of type A or an exception. So now you see that the exception is thrown into the garbage can. I'm a garbage can. I'm Eric. I'm a garbage can. Okay. And you can throw exceptions also in the garbage can. But that means that the garbage can explodes. That once you throw an exception in the garbage can, it cannot do anything anymore. So when I was young, we do fireworks in garbage cans. That was always fun. Okay. But in real life, you can do that too. Now let's look at the real guy. This is not a garbage can. This is like, you know, Kubrick. He made Spartacus, Lolita, Eyes Wide Shut. Anybody seen Eyes Wide Shut with Tom Cruise? All right. It's really kind of like corporate life. You try to have a peak kind of, you know, at the executive level. That's what it is, you know, when Tom Cruise went into the kind of, you know, the secret meeting. Don't go there. Stay behind your terminal and hack. Okay? This movie has kind of deep life lessons. But anyway, then Kubrick terminated normally. Okay? I terminated with an exception, but he terminated gracefully. Okay? So if we look at this setter type and we make the types really precise, we get this. Okay? So a setter is something that I can throw in an exception, and then it blows up. Or I can throw in a normal termination and saying, okay, you're done, but cleanly done. Or I can throw in a value. Okay? Everybody with me? So I've just done the same thing I did for getters. I made the exceptions, the effects explicit, but now the effects appear in front of the arrow. And of course, there's still the implicit IO effect here. So if I would make that explicit, this would also be a throws or an IO or whatever. But I'm not doing that. I'm only looking at these guys. Okay. Now turning this type into something that's more recognizable is much easier. Now the Scala people, they love pattern matching. And I know that, you know, Julian here loves pattern matching too. But I like virtual dispatch. Okay. Because if you do pattern matching, what do? You have to say, well, I need to match this thing. And it can be one of three things. It can be a value. It can be an exception. Or it can be nothing. Okay. So in order to do the pattern match, I have to give you three functions. Because that's, you know, there's a pattern match with three branches, and I have to give three functions. So instead of writing all that noise with pattern matching, I just give me an object with these three methods, and I'll do the pattern matching for you and just dynamically dispatch over the things. Because that's what the V table does for you. And now Julian goes there like, argh! But yeah, I'm here and he's there, so I can kind of say all this.
You'll be there later, though.
Oh, all right. So, but before I'm going to do that, I need to kind of apply the same trick that I did for getters, but in this case, I create a setter of setters. Okay. So because if I have a garbage can, how do I dispose of a garbage can? Well, I have to have a meta garbage can in which I can drop the other garbage can. So that's what we do here. So let's turn this into stuff that we understand. So here we go. This is our meta garbage can in which I can put a garbage can. And a garbage can is something here that has the three methods. What happens when it gracefully terminates? What happens when I throw an exception at it? And what happens when I throw value at it? Okay, so here, I've shown you, this is Rx, this is observable. Okay, and so observable is exactly the opposite of enumerable enumerator. Okay, and all I've done is I've swapped the types around, made them more precise, and then kind of, removed all this functional programming stuff and made it look like, regular interfaces. Okay, isn't that beautiful? Now the thing is, like, you look at this thing, and it's something that we're already familiar with. We use this every day. Observable, or this guy here, think of Java controls. I have a button, okay? A button has multiple callbacks. It can react on various events, and so you give it the event handlers. In this case, I have something that can react on uncompleted, on error, or on next. Most event handlers like buttons and so on don't have a way to terminate or to kind of terminate with an exception, but I add them here, okay? And then this guy, an observable, has a subscribe method, which means I can pass it a callback to observe those events. So this is a type that we already use. Java is full of it, .NET is full of it, everybody, and this is what VB users really use every day. This is what JavaScript users use every day. Okay. Now, if you look in the Design Patterns book, the book that everybody has on their bookshelf but nobody has read, I actually have never met someone who really read the book. You read it? Okay. Now, okay, this is the moment of truth. And the no, that's not going to work. If you open the book on the very large page, so it's not the page, but it's where the cover. What is on there? Because they wanted to save space, so they even printed that kind of back cover on the inside. What's in there? You know.
I forget. No, it's some kind of chart mapping.
Yes. Yes, okay. It's a chart mapping the different design patterns, how they relate. Now you've seen that iterable iterator and observable observer, this is just like subject observer, are deeply related. They are related by the magic of mathematics. In that book, they are not mapped as related. So that book, you throw it in the garbage can or you give it away to your, kind of, if you're mentoring some young programmer, give them the book. But get out of here, because nobody has read it. Even you have not realized that that book doesn't make this connection. You had a question. Ah, oh, now here, you look at this. Ah, okay, good. I nearly forgot, because this is contra covariance. That was the whole, what the whole talk was about. This guy was contravariant, we all agreed, right? So now you ask, why should that guy be covariant? Well, the first time I gave a talk about Rx, I made a mistake. I made this guy covariant. And I was really worried, because this was videotaped. And then I thought, oh, Eric made a fool of himself for the whole internet, but nobody noticed. Now you're going to embarrass yourself, because you're saying that has to be contravariant. Well, let's look at this. Why is this contravariant? If I have an observable that takes an observer, why should that be contravariant? Because really, let me kind of, yeah, we, modern technology we have here. Let's put in a new slide. New slide. Good. And now I'm going to say, well, what we really have is we have a setter. Okay, that was contravariant. And then we have a setter of a setter. So if I kind of remove all that kind of stuff, this is what I have. Okay? Still visible, because this is causing headaches, so that's why it's small. So this is contravariant. But now the contravariant thing here is in a contravariant position. And then it becomes covariant. Because think of this, and here I'm going to explain to you. There's something really more deep going on. This is the Curry-Howard isomorphism, okay? That types are theorems and programs are proofs. You can read about that on Wikipedia, okay? If I have something from T to, this is not is, this is implies. If T implies nothing, okay, that's the same as not T, right? T implies false, that's the same as not T. So really, this thing is not T, which is the same as T. So if you have twice contravariant, it becomes covariant. But if you have twice covariant, it doesn't become contravariant. Okay, but that's, so I don't know why that's the case, just mathematics. You cannot lie with mathematics, or can you? People wonder why this stuff is hard. And then there's these two guys that make it even harder with question mark extends and question mark super in Java. And now you're like this. If you look at cubicles all across America, they're plastered with brains when people use Java generics. All right. Okay, so this is why Gilad over there is my hero, because he said, stop this crap! In Dart, there's only covariance. And even though it's not safe, I don't care, because nobody understands
Ola
it.
Ola Madsen gets the credit for that in Beta.
So Gilad just kind of, you know, stole that from Beta?
Yeah.
That surprises me. Okay, so Beta, of course, Beta, that has everything, right? No, I'm serious, yes. And so then, why didn't you do that in Java, Mats? You're from the Scandinavian school.
And he's got the Beta book, too.
Yes.
I have the Beta book. We did it in TypeScript, so I made it.
Okay, good, you made good.
It's better in my way.
Okay, good.
A preview of things to come.
Okay, Beta's perfect.
The only object-oriented type system I like.
Good, yes. But this stuff is kind of mind-blowing. Thank you for asking, okay? Now, I can do the same trick with lifting here, okay? So I can lift a function from observer to a function from observable to observable. So I can do the same lifting trick, except The lifting now is also contravariant. So if I take a function from observer of S to observer of T, I get back a function from observer of T to from observable of T to observable of S. So again, just like the functor, things are reversed. And because a setter was a cofunctor, and now when I lift that cofunctor with this, it turns around and it becomes a covariant functor. Phew! Saved by the bell. Okay, so I can lift this cofunctor into a functor with this lift function. And this lift function, that's homework, you know, again, you just follow the types. Another thing, the one thing there's many things I miss in C#, but here's one weird thing in C# that always bothered me, okay? This is this, anonymous interclasses. C# has lambdas, but it doesn't have anonymous interclasses, okay? So you cannot just create an instance of an object anonymously. I have to now kind of play compiler myself. I have to kind of define a new class, lift all the variables that are in scope in the constructor. F#, which is marketed as a functional language, has object expressions. So F# is a better object-oriented language than C#. Can you imagine that? How is that possible?
You want prototypes.
Oh. Which one? No. You're right. Look at this. You're absolutely right. So this is why it's very good. I did this. Really, what I wanted to write is leave this out because I just want to return new observable of this. So the braces here go away. But since I wanted to show you the type, I kind of declared a new variable. So I have to kind of here like say O. Okay, let me make this completely correct. O, this is scala. O equals this. Then I don't need this paren. And then I need to return O. Okay, so this is the correct thing. Thanks. Okay, but I wanted to show this guy. So I don't have to really declare this variable. I wanted to show that I create an observable of S. But in some sense, that's already there. So let me kind of remove the confusion. I'm returning a new observable that has this subscribe method. And you can see that this is an observable of S. So feature request for C#. Forget everything that you propose for C# 6. Just give me anonymous interclasses, please.
No.
Good. Thanks. Good. Then my goal for this talk. We can kind of go and have a beer. Okay, yes.
Assuming you'll use it, right? Assuming you'll use it.
If C# has it, I might consider flipping back from Scala to C#. But Julian here is making hack better and better, so like, you know, I might be switching to PHP soon. Okay. So, here you see. You paid attention. Look at that. I really copied and pasted the slides because the typo is still here. See? But the function is exactly the same. That's the beauty. Look at that. Okay, if I want to define map over observables, I just reuse exactly the same code as defining map over enumerables. Okay? So this is like, you know, this is code reuse. This is don't repeat yourself. Yep. My Windows phone tells me. All right. Now, this is all great. But there's no silver bullet, okay? If you look at enumerable enumerator, there's many concrete types that implement enumerable enumerator. And so the same thing is we need many types that implement observable observer, okay? So let's look at a few of them. So these things are, but really both of them are collections. That's the important thing. So the enumerable enumerator, iterable iterator, are pool-based collections because you're calling move next, okay, you're pulling the values out, whereas the observable observer is push-based collections because, you know, you get called back and on next, okay? So that's where kind of this duality comes in. But look at this. Interfaces need implementations. If you look at Scala, and I don't know if this is typical Scala, but there's like hundreds of types that implement iterable. Okay, and here you see all this covariance kind of stuff. Okay, sorted sets, linear sequences, whatever. If you look in .NET, in the BCL, there's hundreds of types that implement enumerable. Okay, so we need the same for observable. Okay, we need the same for observable. And note that these types also, every concrete implementation has more properties. For example, if I have an indexed sequence, even though it implements iterable, it has more properties because I have constant time indexing. Or if I have a set which implements iterable of a set doesn't have duplicates. So every concrete type has kind of more properties, but you compose everything in terms of that common supertype. So now let's look at observable. Okay? So there's a couple of types that implement this. For example, there's event store, which is like storing the observables actually in the store. And if you look at Stream SQL or a lot of the kind of streaming databases, they are implementations of observable. There's a very interesting company. They make Firebase, and Firebase is like an observable kind of in the cloud. What you can do is you can push things at it, and whenever it changes, it will notify you. Okay, so it's like an observable that's out there. So it's like an observable or a reactive database, you might say. And then, for example, Splunk, they just released their SDK where they exposed their data as observables. CouchDB, I should add that here. Let me kind of add those here. That was last week. So CouchDB is another one. CouchDB and MongoDB as well. Oh. Good. So I'm still waiting for SQL Server, Microsoft SQL Server, to be in this list. But hey, who knows? When C# gets anonymous inner classes, maybe. Okay. So the thing is that there are many concrete types that implement observable. So by themselves, they have no value. Okay. But there must be something kind of that implements them. All right. Now let's. I have now 5 minutes, so let me give you a few more kind of downsides of this whole thing, is that I have been lying to you. I always lie, but today I've been really lying to you. Because there's one effect, one super important effect that I didn't mention, and that's latency. So for example, if you have an enumerable and you do get enumerator, that typically goes quick. But then if you call move next, that can take a long time. Okay, so this move next because it's producing a value. And the same thing is when you subscribe to an observable and you give it an on next, this on next can take a long time. Okay, so there's an effect there, namely the effect that the computation takes time that I haven't made explicit in the types. So let's make that explicit in the types, and that will be my last thing here. Okay, so instead of a getter being try option of A, it's really something that returns a future. So sometime in the future, it will return you a value. Okay, so if I'm really precise, I have to kind of do this latency stuff. And guess what? If I add this guy here, then the move next has to kind of return the future of bool. Okay, so this is async enumerable. And way back when we did Rx, we also implemented all the operators on this guy. So if you go to CodePlex, you can get the code for this. But this is something where the move next takes a long time, and then it must return a future. Okay? So I think this is a type that's super useful, because it can deal with sequences where producing the next value takes a long time. So you go to CodePlex, there's all the code. Now, when I do this for observables, you get the same thing. So I had this try option of A, but if this guy, this callback, takes a long time, now the future goes on this side, right? Because It's something that takes any of these values and then takes a long time to produce nothing. Whew. Okay. So if I kind of change that and kind of plug it into the observable type, you get this asynchronous observer. And this protects the producer against slow consumers, because now you have a way where the producer can see if the consumer has finished work on the callback. All right? You had a question?
Yeah.
Okay, so this is another type, and we're currently working on an implementation of this. But we proposed this like also way, way back to do this. Okay, so here's the implementation. And so you see here, I started out by telling you there were just four effects, but really there are six effects. And of course there may be more, but but you can mix and match. But each of these has slightly different characteristics. So it's not that async iterable is the same as observable, because the order in which the side effects happen and who is in control is all different. So these are the types that we have to look at. So I'm convinced we need all four on the right there, because every use case requires that. Okay? So, conclusion. Let's not talk about reactive anymore. I don't want to hear you say reactive. It's all about composing side effects in the right way. Okay? And each of these types is kind of, looking at them and say, where are the effects and which are the interesting effects? Okay? And whether you call it reactive or not is completely meaningless. It's all about side effects. Programming or designing APIs or designing languages, in my view, is all about looking at side effects and kind of, it's like putting spices in food. And these are the six spices. Thank you so much. Hey!
Hey!
How are you doing, Carl?
I'm doing good.
Good.
Standard blue, you're in standard Eric.
Yes. So what's your question, Carl?
My question is, how does this relate to another thing we've talked about over the years, namely actor message passing?
Ah, good. Actor message passing. So again, if you look at actor message passing, I think if you read, your old papers about that.
Or even listen to our joint video.
In my view, that also is all about thinking about what are the kind of, the effects that, or the kind of, constraints that you deal with. Yes.
What the communication.
At the communications, yes.
It's up to the actor about the effects.
But the communication is also kind of effective. So like, is the communication asynchronous? Is the communication synchronous? Can messages get lost? So all these things are... Exactly. They don't ever get lost.
NSA can do a denial of service attack. That will be the limit of their abilities.
Yeah. The way I would kind of answer your question is that I think if you look at actors, you did what I said. You are the cook. You came up with a set of things that you think are relevant to kind of, model
the players. Yeah.
And that's kind of, how you compose your systems. Mm-hmm.
The idea is we need to get around the strangulation of Amdahl's law. As soon as you put one of those pipes in there, you're in danger of Amdahl's law. Whereas if you have all these actors mutually communicating with each other, we have escaped.
But the thing is, let me say it like this. The effects of communicating with the actor, right? That is where I think, you make it explicit. So if I send a message to an actor, what is the signature of that, of the message, of the call that I do? Uh-huh. Okay, does it...
It's whatever he consumes.
Well, but the thing is, if it's synchronous, that call...
Synchronous in this day and age.
Exactly.
Nothing's synchronous.
Exactly, nothing is synchronous. So you say this thing must have has a different effect.
He will do what he does.
Exactly.
Or she will do what she does.
Yep.
Even better.
Good. Other questions? By the way, you can watch this video on Channel 9. It's It's everything, you know, you never dare to ask about actors, you know,
yeah.
And Carl answers everything.
No, we interact.
Yes.
We send messages back and forth.
Fort, yes.
So, Dave, you had a question?
Yeah. So, when I look at this kind of thing, I wonder if something is just fundamentally wrong with the notion of type, because it does get complicated, although you explain it so well. And one candidate I have is that when many people talk about subtyping, they don't talk about context. You know, they want substitutability, but they assume that there's just one big context in the sky, and that's what the substitutability is relative for. But in any particular given context, something may be substitutable for something else, pardon me, although it's not in some other. And so I just wanted to lay that on you. It's kind of half comment, half question, and give you a chance to respond.
Yeah. No. So you're absolutely right. So I don't like whenever I hear the Liskov substitution principle, my alarm bells go off as well. Okay. Because for me, it's not really about being able to substitute one for another. Okay. The thing that what is important for me is that, you know, where types I think are helpful for me is that if I don't have types and I have a callback interface, then I cannot look at the interface and decide, you know, what the behavior is. Okay, so if the callback returns void, I know something that it behaves differently than when the callback returns a task. And if there's no types, you know, there's no way I can see that except by looking into the code. Okay? But for me, it's not so much that, you know, like that if you have a future of T, you can give it a future of S, or like the substitution is not something that I care about. For me, the types are really that I can understand some aspect of my code without having to look in the implementation. And so it kind of makes certain assumptions explicit. Okay, good.
All right, let's take one more question.
So I'm curious if you would throw away the stream interfaces and use these getters and setters instead. I mean, we have multiple different ways of doing streaming-like behavior. Do we need to unify those? Or?
So the thing is, there's one thing. It's like if you look at getters and setters per se, the problem with a getter only is that it doesn't kind of give you a way to kind of create your own fresh copy of a getter. So if you look at, like if you would implement everything using iterators, you know, typically iterating over the iterator will kind of exhaust it. Okay, so now if two of you have an iterator, you know, then you will see the side effect. So that's why I think this kind of, you know, the getter is important. And the same for the setter. It's like, you know, you have to have something that you can give a callback. But what I propose here is that I think it's already that, you know, enumerable is the kind of base interface of most standard pool-based collections, like lists and sets and whatever. Okay. So what I'm proposing is that we need a similar interface for push-based things. Okay. So if you have events, so if you have a button, that button should be an observable of clicks, okay? Because now I can compose things using that interface instead of based on the concrete types. So that's the kind of one thing. And then the second thing is that I think that there's more subtle differences between these types depending on how these different methods kind of behave with respect to latency. So, but again, it's all about giving you an interface in which you can compose things, and then there's many different implementations, but when you want to compose them, you want to compose them in terms of the interface.
How do streams fit into this?
Well, streams, if you have a pull-based stream, you have this. If you have a push-based stream, you have this.
Yeah, it's like input stream and output stream.
But streams in, say, in the Java libraries, they're more like the enumerator. Right. That they have the issue that you say that only one person can pull from them.
Yes.
Because then the stuff is consumed.
Oh, you mean Java streams?
I don't know, just streams in general.
Yes. So in streams in general, this is exactly what I think I answered your question then. This is if you have pool-based streams where the consumer is in charge, you either have this interface or this interface, depending whether you care about latency. And when the producer is in charge, you have this interface or this interface, depending whether you care about latency.
And those are called read streams and write streams.
And no, because both of them are streams of, well, yeah, I've reached.
The consumer is in charge, it's pulling values out.
Yep.
I want you guys to get together in the break.
Yes.
Yes. Just one final point here. What said, that is, since I coined the name future, I'm all in favor of their potential reduced latency.
Okay.
But they also can increase latency, particularly if you have a VEX. You get the Rip Van Winkle effect, okay, because you can't process all the futures all the time. Some of them get indefinitely delayed. The Rip Van Winkle future wakes up, and he has his effect. He throws the tomato forever, long after the program imagined that the tomato would ever be thrown.
Yep. Oh, yeah. So this is a great thing. This is, if you look at my paper, you know, the curse of the excluded middle,
yeah.
That is one of the examples I give there is when, you know, when you kind of have an exception that kind of, you know, is deferred like this,
yeah.
It doesn't have to be in a future. It can also just be in a closure.
Yeah, that's right.
And then when later you call the closure, it blows up in your face in a very different space and time than where it's
giving it permission to do that.
Yes. All right, good question.
So, let's try Gary again.